Welcome to the Product Design Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Coolin, founder of UX Cabin, where we create world-class web and mobile apps. I'm excited to bring you a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of some of the most interesting and talented people in product design. We'll get strategic advice on how they got to where they are today and things they wish they would have known earlier in their career.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today we have Janiel Dalal with us. He is a staff designer, mentor, and host of the Design MBA show. Janiel, thank you so much for coming on to chat with us today.
I know. Oh my God. So I forget the exact year when we recorded. I want to say it was 2020, unless I'm mistaken.
It sounds kind of right.
I literally remember very vividly, like I was interviewing you and I was so nervous about so many things with the podcast and you had said those like golden words to me because I was so hesitant. You said like, dude, it's okay. Like you can figure it out as you go. And I remember in that moment, I really needed to hear that.
Yes. No, that was a great time. Coming on your show just really expanded my mind to the opportunity for making connections online in kind of like a crazy way. I remember one of my friends was on your podcast and I just simply commented on it. And then we started talking and we got connected. I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. Like if you make a meaningful comment or connection, like things happen. And so in a roundabout way, that's kind of what this podcast is all about, trying to just meet cool people, bring them on, make connections, network, and, you know, build a little community. So in a roundabout way, I owe a lot to you and really excited to dive in and learn more about your journey here.
I'm humbled to hear that. I've had a lot of people that have helped me along the way. And yes, podcast is seriously like you're going to any place and you're saying that, hey, I have this VIP card. Can I just come into this exclusive club? It's like if you had a question about design or something and you're reaching out to someone who's a design leader or a designer that you admire, it's so much more easier to, so a little bit of backstory. So with the stuff with the podcast and just like networking and stuff, like I was doing this for quite some time. So like ever since like I'm originally from India. So even since like as early as like 2010, 2011, I was like meeting people in real life and emailing them, doing all these things. At the time I wanted to do masters. So like I had like cold email the professors of the programs and kind of got meetings with them, even got some internship opportunities, even without actually getting into the master's program. So, but then I decided like not to do the master's and just kind of like be more like in the field. And then while like doing all that, so what I was doing is I would apply for a design conference. And let's say if I get selected at a nice big name, then I would leverage their brand to reach out to other designers who were working on some cool stuff at like Amazon or Google and be like, hey, I'm giving a talk here at this so-and-so design conference. I would want to interview you about chatbots or conversational design. Would you be available for an interview? Now, it worked for a while. Also required me to keep getting selected at these conferences. And then there was like 1 year where I just did not get selected anywhere. By the way, it's super, super hard to get selected at these conferences. And that's where a buddy of mine and me were shopping at Costco. And he's like, dude, like, why are you relying on these other platforms? Like if you had your own show, you could just invite anybody, anytime. And that was like the genesis for me to be like, oh my God, like I can have a podcast and that'd be like a perfect excuse
to
have my questions answered and build a connection with this person.
Love it. Love it. That's exactly right. I mean, to be honest, I like downloads are cool and stuff like that. But like, I really care much, much, much less about the number of downloads or even like ad opportunities or sponsorship deals or anything like that. And really, it's just an awesome excuse to meet really cool people and learn about their journey. So I completely agree. I think if you get into podcasting, you kind of have to dedicate yourself to the long haul and kind of put blinders on as far as like, you're not going to probably get rich off of it, but yeah, I think you will get rich in growing your network and in building a community.
Absolutely.
Cool, man. Well, why don't we get into it a little bit and start, you know, talking about your journey? How did you even get into design in the first place, and what led you to where you are today?
Oh, man, that's a pretty crazy story. But I'm an electrical engineer by degree, if you think about it. And I was really passionate about all the open source, like hardware, like this whole Raspberry Pi, Arduino, and all this like fun stuff. I was working on that. And, you know, I worked at some companies like Texas Instruments and Intel for a while. And then what was happening is, in the broader landscape, you had like Apple and Samsung that used to go to these other companies to like for chips. And then these two big companies said that we're going to make our own chips in-house for the smartphones. Right. So as a result, the demand really dried up in that market. So what I kind of saw was really scary. Like, oh my God, it's like, you know, if you were in the 90s and you were doing Java development, you were like making money hand over fist. But like now, like it's like every street, you'll find somebody who knows how to do Java. Like there's probably other newer languages that you probably want to learn. So it was kind of like a similar story here. I was like, you know, I really like working on the hardware side of things, but the opportunities for the specific role that I'm doing are so less and diminishing that either I retool and repurpose myself for this, like the next couple of years, or I'm going to be obsolete. And when I say obsolete, it's not going to be obsolete, but if I were to lose this job, I'd rather lose it early on now than in the late 30s or something like that, versus in my 20s, right. Kind of like one of those things, trade off.
Right.
The stupidity of this was I should have like just kept on to the job while I kept like transitioning into UX and try to find a job and stuff, but I didn't. That's the stupid thing you do in your 20s. I was just like, oh, let's go all in and stuff. And then I didn't have much savings and stuff. And then I thought it would be pretty easy, but actually it took me about more than 8 months or maybe like 9 months, if you think about from that specific day to like actually like starting at a new job. It was much longer than I thought. And in that process, not having enough savings, I also went broke, and that kind of humbled me in many ways. But yeah, man, it was crazy.
So like, do you think it was going to be easier than it was?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, you know, like it's good. Like I attended one or two meetups and there are people like always hiring in that meetups. I went to local Dallas meetups. I was like, oh, this should be pretty straightforward. But it wasn't, because you know, when you talk to these people, they're like, what experience do you have in design? And you say like, nada, you say zero. And they're like, oh, shit. So that part was very humbling for me, like hitting rock bottom in life. So that's why when people are like, oh my God, I'm just frustrated with my job so much. Like I hate this sales job, or I hate this like other job that I'm doing. I just want to be doing design all day. When I mentor folks, I say like, listen, I've been where money is a big problem. I've been places where I had to like cook like for people just to like make ends meet. You do not want to do that, because that puts a strain on this new field you're trying to learn and get into. So I just tell them that do whatever it takes to keep your income going while you try to like make inroads in the design field. So for me, it was a lot of like self-taught learning. Like I would go and someone would say like, hey, read this book, read the Apple Human Interface Guidelines. But the fact was, I was like, showing up there so much. And then at one point I was like, how can I provide value? Right? Like, I don't want to be that person that comes up to these meetups and just says that, hey, Seth, can you give me a job? Hey, can you give me a job? So I said, well, you know what? Maybe let me go to the organizer and say, how can I provide value? So I went up to the organizer, Brian Sullivan, amazing friend, mentor. He organizes the big design conference in Dallas and also the Dallas UX meetups. And I said, how can I provide value? And he looks at me and he says, like, do you know how to like shoot a video and edit it? And I was like, I didn't really know, but I just said yes, like for the hell of it, like how hard can it be? So I kind of like went to Best Buy and like bought like some like recording gear and taught myself some basic editing over the weekend. And the next meetup, I showed up with a camera and I started recording every monthly UX meetup in Dallas. They had like once every month, sometimes twice, and I recorded every one. So now all these design leaders who were speaking got to know me because they wanted to see their video come out. People started seeing that, oh yeah, this is that Indian guy who shows up here. Because like, dude, like my business card was literally like a brown dude who loves to do UX and cook. Literally, like that used to be my tagline, because people remember like, oh yeah, it's that dude. I remember now. So people started remembering me. And then to kind of like skip ahead, a bunch of things happened, but there were just so many people who got to know, especially Brian, and he knew so many people. So like, let's say I was not able to get any interviews because of my lack of qualifications, but him putting his word of mouth there. So like he reached out to someone who was like the SVP of design at like a Fortune 100 company in Dallas and just said that, hey, I highly recommend Janiel, you should interview him. And this person, even though they were not hiring, they just met with me out of courtesy to Brian.
Yep.
And in trying to get the breakthrough, my first breakthrough was literally like Brian putting his word out. So even if the recruiter was like, hey, I don't think like Janiel qualifies on paper, but just to the fact that Brian said yes, I would at least get an interview. And then from there, it was just like, I needed an opportunity. And once obviously I got an interview, I knew I could do my best to convince the hiring manager to give me a shot. So a lot of this was kind of like showing up every time, building a relationship where someone would say that, well, I know that you don't have the experience, but we've seen for the past 8 months, you consistently recording all the videos, providing value. I'll put my brand and name behind you.
Yep.
Kind of give you a shot.
Dude, that's the name of the game right there. Like, you know, everyone, when you apply for a job, if you do it the normal way, you're on this playing field that totally just kind of nullifies any specialty that you have. But as soon as you get like a referral or a warm intro or someone with a reputation that's willing to put their name behind you, someone who is well respected that you've built a relationship with, like that's going to open so many doors for you, so many more doors than having like an awesome portfolio or a really good application or cover letter or resume. Like those types of relationships open 100x more doors than anything else.
Like you see those LinkedIn posts where like folks will say like, hey, it's been really demotivating for the past 6-8 months. I've applied to 300 design roles. Out of that, I've gotten like 25 interviews or something like that. Made it to like the final round and 2-3 of them and then still got rejected. So I forgot the exact statistics, but I'm like, God damn, like you applied to 300 roles. Like it's so like grudge work. I mean, like unless you're a salesperson. And then what really changed my mind, Seth, was this like idea that every single opportunity in life, it doesn't exist by itself. It's tied to a human being. So like, for example, UX Cabin, you know, like doesn't like give jobs, right? There are people at UX Cabin, like you, that actually are connected to that opportunity. So even if it's a big company, there's some human being at that company that's in charge of hiring for that role. So for me, it's like the way I was raised and what I believe in is more of like, how can I connect with that human being, that individual, rather than this mass, like, let me just like shoot in 100 different directions and whatever hits, kind of hits. And it worked for some people. I mean, I'm not saying it's not working, but I don't know how I can go through it, man.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Because it's like, if robots were hiring and it was just matching up qualifications on your resume, like, then you would want to focus all your attention on whatever the criteria are. But like, we know that like people are personal beings, they're irrational, they are emotional, and people do work with who they know. So if you are introduced, you are already at the absolute top of the pack. You still got work to do. You still got to, you know, interview well, you still got to present well, but like you're in that top echelon just by having a warm introduction. And that's honestly like even the same for like UX Cabin for sales. Like me getting referred to another company is, you know, almost a closed deal as opposed to me just applying to some random RFP, right? It just puts you in a whole new level.
Absolutely. And despite us talking about this, a lot of people are still not going to do it.
Oh, and
boy, it is hard work. And then also, like, you know, you mentioned early on that it's the long haul, like even in the podcasting game. So in this current age of like instant gratification, it's really hard to do something like if you tell someone that, hey, or if I tell someone that you got to build relationships, there's no timeline. Like it could be that you build a relationship with someone in 8 months down the road, 2 years down the road, something pans out of it, right?
Yeah.
like, for example, like me and you are doing the show, but like, if you really think about it, like we first got connected 2 years ago, almost, right?
Yep.
Actually, we did pass 2 years and then, you know, we kind of kept in touch. But if I start to put like this thing where something's got to come out right now, I don't know. Like, it's just really hard to put a timeline and that uncertainty when like, oh, will it pay off? It wasn't it for me. And why am I putting this effort that's going in this like abyss with nothing to show for? That whole like uncertainty of it really turns people off into, they're like, you know what? I'm just going to like go with this thing that I can measure like 100, 500 like applications for design right. goals.
Well, it's easy to apply too. It's like you just click one button. It's like, you know, it's just like dating for, you know, job marketing. Yeah. It's just like, boom, just hit a button and, you know, spray and pray.
Dude, this is so crazy. But like back in the early days, I remember like there's this guy who designed like this auto liker for like these dating apps where if you would install the auto liker, it would automatically like everyone in your area without you doing anything. And I'm just like laughing because I'm like, what if we created an application where like you want to say like, oh, I want to apply for a design role. You select like what role you want, right? What geography. And then this application, like, because you still right now have to manually go on different websites and even if it's copy and paste, but this thing would do it for you.
Ooh, that's interesting. I remember there used to be something kind of like that for Dribbble where you could just like set up a bot to like other people's stuff and it would just like,
oh my God,
get you yeah. on their radar. And then you'd wake up the next day and you'd have like 30 new followers just because they like saw that you like their stuff. So,
oh, man. I mean, we'd be getting kicked out pretty quickly, but you could turn
for it. No, but I you're totally right. Like any networking I've done or like connections I've made have always been the most fruitful, but they've never been immediate. So when I was freelancing back in the day, I would meet with someone who, you know, might have a job or a project, and it was very rare that it would start the next week or the next month. But it was building these things that you're planting a seed that, you know, comes to fruition 6, 12, 9, 24 months down the road. And
or maybe never.
Literally, or maybe never. And that's totally fine. Yeah. And it's just like, maybe they refer you to someone else. Maybe the project falls through, but they remember, like, I literally had a guy reach out to me that I had lunch with 3 years ago talking about a project. And he was like, hey, had a really good impression when we met and you came into my mind for this new project. Can we talk again?
Wow.
And that just tells me that like nobody, maybe only a few people had lunch with that guy that is in my field doing what I do. And it's like, no one does this. And if you want to separate yourself, it's not by having the best designs or the best case studies. It's really just having, you know, good human interaction and not having horrible design or not having, you know, design that gets in the way of itself.
So, you know, we were talking about like our mutual friends and like Stefan Olmsted, right? So
yeah.
He was my first guest on the show. And something he talked about was like, leveraging the power of being a B+ designer. So like you've got designers that are like, man, their work is going to be like celebrated in art museums, like on covers of magazines. Like these are people that are just like so good at the art, like top level, that maybe they don't need to do all this networking and all these things. They're just like, their art speaks for itself, and which is awesome. But you know, I'm one of those people, man. Like I don't think my art is at that level. Like, I don't think like if you give me an hour and I just come up with something in Figma, you're going to be like, oh my God, like that needs to get an award. Like, you know, like it's going to be good, but it's not going to be like, oh my God, I've never seen this kind of art in my life kind of thing. You know, the aha moment, like Picasso level. So that's where like the concept that he taught me about being a B+ designer. So like, let's say you are a B+ designer in like the skills and visual, but then you're also like a good communicator. You also can collaborate good with people, all these things combined together. Like even if your portfolio is like B+, then, but you're also putting in work, going to meetups, connecting with people, combined, all those things makes you like an A designer, like A level.
100%. And there's so many things that don't take skill that you can be really good at just by being thoughtful and intentional about it. Like taking good meeting notes or following up or, giving recaps to, you know, just being a little bit like more thoughtful of like being less terse in your like your email responses, just like giving a good vibe off of every interaction you have with everyone, or delivering your stuff on time. Or if you're not going to deliver it on time, give a heads up, or, you know, ask for help, or just say, it's not going to be here, it's going to be tomorrow, whatever. Like, there's so many things that don't require any skill and just require a little bit of thought that can like literally change you from a C skill set to a B or A minus, or from, you know, a B to an A player, just by like intentional hustle points, basically.
Do any examples come to mind when you say terse email replies?
So I don't know. That's one of those like touchy-feely type of things where it's like, sometimes I'll get an email and I'll be like, you know, you interpret it. They're like, you know, someone will say like, that is fine, period. And really what they're probably saying is like, yeah, that's fine. But you read it
and,
you know, you read it as like, this is barely acceptable to me. You know, it's just like going out of your way to just be like, I'm happy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Like, we'll get through this, like just giving that good feeling that carries through, and totally subjective, right? But yeah, I'm not saying you have to put like emojis and 100 exclamation points and everything. You like, you can stay professional.
No, but you're spot on. Like, I work remotely. I think, you know, this is my second job where I've done remote work. And I think now I'm so hooked and sold that I don't think I can foresee myself going to like an in-person type of job setting ever again. Again, I say that, but who knows?
Right.
So a lot of the stuff in the remote, like kind of like setting with different time zones, relies on you being a good communicator. And if you're working with someone every day, to your point, instead of saying, hell yeah, let's do this, versus like, okay, or even just that letter, hey, and you're like, come on, like, what is going on here?
Yeah, give me a little something more, right? Yeah. I feel like even the way that you ask things, like, you know, you could say like, is this done yet? Or you could be like, hey, what's up, man? Checking in on this project. How's this thing going? No, you're working hard on it, or something like that. Like, just giving a little bit more personal touch to it that makes it feel a little bit more meaningful than just like a transactional thing, you know?
I felt attacked when you said like, is this done yet? I felt like I'm on some kind of spot where like, like literally when he said, is this done yet? For a second, I was like, wait, what was I supposed to submit to this guy? Like, was there a deadline? And like, that's literally what my brain was thinking about. Like, oh my God, like, oh, like, am I late or something? But when you said the other one, like, hey, what's going on? I know you're working on this. It felt like, oh, he is not like micromanaging me or something. He's not, but he's just like kind of wanting to know the status of it. And I would say, oh yeah, I said everything's going good. It's almost like 85% done. It suddenly puts me at ease, I feel like, when you do it, when you did it the second way.
Yeah, I feel like people do their best work when they're at ease. Like, a little bit of stress is good for sure. But like, if you are like hounding down someone and you are like just on them, on their case,
like,
you know, you might be able to prescriptively get the design that you want and make them kind of be like a pixel pusher. But if you want someone to like actually flourish and do their best design work, you gotta like give them space to feel comfortable, in my opinion.
But it's hard, man. So like, if you're, let's say, juggling multiple meetings and you want to still know the status of the wireframes, it's so easy to slip in to say, is this done yet? Right. And if you think about it, what you said is just going to take like, I don't know, 2 seconds more typing like a few extra words. But in the heat of the moment, trying to like checklist through everything that we want to do.
Right. Yeah. Like, no. And there's room for that too, right? Like, sometimes it's like, it's a crazy day. You're just going between meeting and you're just like, you know, you type in the like project status ? Like, you know, yeah. So I think it's, you know, it's not to be, this like, you know, cool surfer, like chill guy all the time, but it's like,
yeah.
More often than not, if you give a good asynchronous, you know, communication, like, then when you do have to send like the quick, hey, where is this? It's like, it's, you know, it's like, okay, this is not typical. He's really busy or there's a deadline or whatever. And it balances itself out.
And I think because you would have done that 4 or 5 times early on, like, hey, what's going on? Just, I know you're working hard, just checking in. because you've done that 4 or 5 times, let's say before. So the sixth time when you just like say project name status, I kind of know it's okay because you've put in the hard work initially.
Right.
To communicate your personality.
Right. Or, you know, conversely, it's like, oh man, I haven't been, you know, keeping my end of the bargain. I've missed deadlines and now I see the change in tone. Therefore, I know like is a little bit more serious. This is a little bit like on me now, which you don't really get that if you start off that way. It's like, oh, this is just what he does all the
time. Oh, yeah.
But
it's very hard
being nicer.
Yeah.
Being kind of like nicer at default or more friendly at default, it really gives you a nice spectrum to be able to flex if something is like going wrong or something is out of that like acceptable criteria.
I do not want to be on your bad side. Like, I want this money. Cool set off the side. Like,
yes. But yeah, man, one thing that you mentioned to me, and I think even one thing I experienced with you is like your email outreach and your ability to kind of land these cool opportunities and guests. Obviously, we talked about the network effect of introductions and things like that. But I think you also have a pretty good knack for like cold emailing and landing cool opportunities without networking. And I would love to kind of hear your secret sauce on that.
Ooh, thank you, by the way, so much for that. I think I've been flexing that muscle so much with just getting guests on the show. Then recently someone told me that, hey, you need to teach people this, make a course. And I'm like, I don't think I want to make a course, but this is the closest it gets to teaching that. But it's like, you know, no one's going to come to my apartment in Dallas and be like, hey, knock, knock. We know that this talented designer, Janiel, lives here. Can we like, you know, like talk to him? That's not going to happen. Like I have to put myself out there. And I remember in one of my jobs, this amazing executive, she told me something that changed my perspective. One thing she said that, Janiel, it's not about who you know, but who knows you. So like, if I'm trying to break in somewhere, if I'm trying to do something, the point is, do you even know that I exist? And it's coming from that mindset that I do cold emailing. So for me, and I've even gotten like design jobs that way. Like literally I've like emailed, I saw a post from the director who was hiring for the design role. I literally found out who the VP of design was and I literally sent a message to both of them. Now it did help my case that I was connected to both of them on LinkedIn, right? So I messaged them both saying that interested in joining your design team. And I addressed to both of them that, hey, I read your post and looks really exciting. Below is a pitch video on why I would make a great addition to your team. And it was a link to a video that I shot using Loom. And the reason I use Loom is because in Loom, you can obviously record both just video and screen share. But I kind of like, it was like, I always try to make it like in pitch videos, like now, not more than a minute, maximum minute and 30 seconds. And I literally said, hey, my name is Janiel. This is my portfolio. I've worked in enterprise design, which kind of fits the role you're looking for here. So yeah, happy to chat more. Thank you for taking the time to view this. And then I also researched on them. So like if they're doing something interesting or if let's say they're hiring and the people hiring are, they wrote an article about something, about Design Sprint, for example. I'll just say that, oh, I also read your Medium post on Design Sprint, loved it. So now when you reach out to someone, it shows the other person that you're not like mass spamming them. You've actually done the background research for them. So even when I reached out to you and any guests, like I legitimately spend sometimes a week to 2 weeks, like not continuously, but spread out researching about you. I want to get to know you as much as possible. And then I try to convey that in that cold email. And then I always have a video link, like, and I say below is a short pitch video, like bracket 1 minute, and then share that link. The benefit is you can express yourself even more, the energy, like, hey, what's going on? My name is Janiel. Seth, oh my God, I love your podcast. And I'm so excited and pumped. And here's my portfolio. I would love to like work with you. I saw that you had an open role for a designer. But yeah, thank you for watching this video. And hopefully we get to chat soon.
Boom. Yes, 100%.
That's literally what I would record and send it to you. And I would find your email like maybe on your LinkedIn or your website or somewhere. Like I prefer the email route first, just because all routes eventually lead to email. That's what I believe. Like you message somebody on Twitter or LinkedIn, they'll be like, here, let's take this off here. Here's my like email. And even if you want to set up a meeting, like you can't send a meeting to their Twitter. Like, you know, like you still got to send to some kind of email. So I prefer email that way. And then I'll just shoot you that email. And dude, it's worked wonders. So that's usually my framework, like in terms of like the philosophy. And the only other thing is I try to break this down into 3 to 4 paragraphs. So, and it's like short enough where you don't have to scroll on your mobile phone. Like it's literally like, as soon as you get your email on your phone, right? Like you see it on your phone, you shouldn't be able to like, you don't need to scroll. Like it's like that concise, right? So this way I'm also like catering to the fact that as a designer, you want to cater towards these things, your users. And you don't want them to scroll endlessly. Like, I'm so passionate about design. I read this book and like, no, there's no love letter going on there.
Right.
But well,
I think that's brilliant on a number of levels. So like number one, I think anyone who sends a video recording is going to immediately get noticed. It's kind of like, do I want my email read or not? Do I want to be taken seriously? Cool. Send this video. 99 out of 100 people aren't going to do this. So, and I would guess in the next 5-10 years, people are going to start doing this. It's going to be more common. But if you want a shortcut to like the front of the line, the fast pass, like send a video, just do it, get good at it, practice it. You can retake it, whatever. It's 1 minute. Like, you know, be energetic, be excited, send a video. It's going to get you to the top of the line. And then the other part I think is crucial is like people don't care about you. They don't know you. They like themselves and they like what they've done. That's just human nature. It's not anything like bad. It's just like we have to play to what people like. They like to hear their name. They like to know like that what they're doing is important. And if you can recognize that, like, boom, you're stroking someone's ego and you are, you know, getting their attention, right? It's genuine like research that you did on that person to show that like, I am going above and beyond what everyone else is doing in just my outreach. How much more do you think I'm going to go above and beyond when I'm actually doing the design to like do the research or figure out the right pattern or the, you know, everything else? So subconsciously, I think those things really communicate a lot to someone without even talking about design or how much passion you have about it. Or like, it's like, okay, who cares? Everyone's, you know, passionate about design. Like that doesn't tell me anything about you, right?
I couldn't agree more. And you're right. Like, as long as like the next 5, 10 years, I know that a lot of people are not going to do it because, you know, I mean, it takes time, man, like to create this video. I mean, obviously Loom makes it easier, but you got to like sit here and think about what you're going to say for a minute. So you have to think about this. But then once you do it, it's like now, even the videos I sent out, like this is recording right now using my DSLR. I actually record these like 1 minute videos now using DSLR. So it's like super high definition. So you keep on improving the system. But like that's my like leverage or arbitrage or like advantage to kind of cut through the noise. And it's like you have to like understand the philosophy and then you really got to like want to do it. So it's like someone who's like mass applying to 500 places, they're not going to want to do this because it's not scalable. It's so hard to make 500 videos for different companies. Research, it's just not possible. So one of the things for this approach is that you kind of like have to know what you want in some ways, or you got to be like narrow about your choice. So you're like, hey, where do you want to work? And I say, well, anywhere. Well, that's kind of like a lot of options. But if I tell you that, hey, I want to work in, example, crypto, or it's got to be remote, or it's got to be this. Now, suddenly we've got filters that narrow down all those opportunities. So for this cold networking approach that I'm telling you about, it really only works if you kind of like know exactly who you want to talk to, what is it that you want to, the field you want to work in. Because again, every opportunity is connected to a human being. So you really got to know the human being behind that opportunity. And to get to that level, you kind of have to know like, this is the opportunity I want to pursue versus like, oh, there's 100 companies in Dallas. Let me just apply to all of them. And to your point about why I don't think even 5-10 years from now, this would be a common thing is because for that to happen, people have to really like have a strong conviction what they want to like want out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost likening it to like basketball shots. Like you could go and do like 300 half court shots and you could not make any of them. That's kind of tiring. It's like, you got to heave that thing. You got to, it's just like throwing it up there, praying it makes it. And like, maybe you're a really good shot. Maybe you have a good portfolio, you know, whatever the corollary skill set is, you can make some of those. But for like, for most of us, it's like, I want to scoot up as close as I can. Can I get a free throw? Can I hit a few more free throws if I just sit here, take my time and try to do 20 free throws versus 300 half court shots? Probably going to have a better percentage chance doing that. I think that's corollary for, you know, job applications or even just like networking and meeting people. Like, get as close as you can and try to take your best shot versus heaving it from half court and hoping something sticks.
And, you know, this is why they say common sense is not so common. Like, this to me and you is common sense, but it's not that common. That's the beauty of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Common sense isn't always easy. It's work to make a video. It's work to research someone, and it's work to go find their email address. Like, maybe it's not on their LinkedIn. Maybe it's like hidden somewhere in some like, you know, GitHub profile. But like in all of like the applications I get, like I get, you know, things through LinkedIn and I see them, but it's like, if something hits my email, it has a, like an interesting like subject, like I'm always going to read that. I got to go like through all my emails. And so, you know, going through a side door or going through a door that's not the door that everyone else is going in, being overlooked, like find those interesting ways of entry. You know, like maybe it's, you're the first tweet reply on someone, some, you know, design celebrity, and they notice you that way. Maybe it's finding their email. Maybe it's replying to how to fix a design problem they have, and you give them the solution. Make your area of opportunity, your area of luck bigger by doing things that no one else is doing.
That last part you said, I think that's something that I didn't like talk about earlier, but by doing all this, like you're increasing the surface area of your luck. You're like spot on about it. Like, suddenly, instead of just like this small area that you're working out of, suddenly it's much bigger because you're doing all these things. And it's like an avalanche effect. Like if like I went skiing a couple of months ago, the first time in my life doing it, but they were talking about how like in certain mountains, you can cause an avalanche if you went there. So that's literally like the snowball effect. Like, all these efforts you put in, like one by one, over the course of a career, they do compound.
Yes.
They do start to add up. And then you're right, your surface area for luck increases because other people are suddenly aware about your talents. So when the right opportunity comes in, you've got like multiple people saying that, hey, you know, like you said, like that gentleman who had lunch with you saying that, hey, you had a good impression on me and I thought about you for this project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, the other thing I was thinking about is like this idea of like increasing your area of opportunity or luck, just like what you said earlier. No one's going to come to your door and be like, hey, I heard a designer lives here. Can we give you a really, you know, high paying job or a good opportunity? Maybe sometimes those things are going to happen, but I wouldn't want to sit around and wait for those. But like, no one is just sitting around waiting to offer you an opportunity, and you have to go out and make those opportunities, and you can make those and you can do those effectively. But like, I see so many people who are like, man, I've, you know, done all the work. I've gone through the boot camp. I've applied, I've done this job, and I'm not getting anything. And it's like, cool. Well, you and, you know, 3 billion other people have gone through a boot camp and are passionate about design and really want to work hard, right? What's going to separate you? It's not that you care about the design. It's not that you, you know, went through a boot camp or that you have, you know, these case studies. Like, that's kind of like baseline, right? But it's like, what is going to increase your opportunity? It's going to be, what content have you created? What things that have you done to help boost your name in the community? And by saying boost your name, I mean, what have you done to, you know, help others in the community that in turn boosts your name, right? And those things are going to be the things that separate you, as opposed to just doing what everyone else has done and gives you no separation from anyone else.
And as you were saying that, I do know a lot of people will complain, like they will vent like I'm not getting a design job. I'm not getting the breakthrough I wanted. Of course, it's easier once you have some experience. A lot more doors open for you versus when you're still in the early phase. So I'm reading this book called Big Magic. And in that, there's this like passage where this guy who wants to be a director is frustrated, is complaining, and writes to another famous director who's already made it. And I'm paraphrasing, by the way. And he writes an email saying that, I want to make a movie, but you know, it's so hard. Like production costs are so expensive. People are not that interested in the films that I want to make. The topics they're interested in watching are like seem stupid to me. But that's not going my way. And it was like a long, long letter, like just venting and venting. Now, surprisingly, this famous director wrote back saying, stop complaining. You chose to be an artist. The universe or the world didn't ask you. The world does not owe you a thing. If you must steal a camera, but stop whining. And that is so applicable. Obviously, you know, it's kind of like rude to just say it, but that's the brutal reality of it. Is like more and more people are going to do this. They're going to like go the halfway court, keep shooting the shots or keep mass applying. And then, you know, I've been to a lot of students and they'll complain that, hey, nothing's happening. And you know, to me, it's just like, we've had this conversation before. Like you keep doing the same thing, mass applying, and you expect that something will turn out of it because you're not comfortable with this other route, which I told you about, like building connections one at a time. And it's just like, and then it gets into this whole, this complaining phase. And I'm like, it's really not helping you or me or anybody.
Yep.
And the moment you start doing that, like the other thing is people don't like to be around people who complain. If you go to a meetup and you're complaining like, hey, I'm not getting any job and stuff, people not want to hang out with you because it's like negative energy.
Right. They're like, well, why aren't you getting a job or why aren't you getting callbacks? Like,
there you go.
Something must be wrong with you, right? Like,
yes.
It's all these like subconscious things that communicate to people. Like, and I even think if it's like, okay, I can't get any jobs. No one wants to hire me and I think I'm awesome and they're just not seeing it. That's a real scenario. I understand that exists. Maybe you're better than how you present or just have rough luck, right? So like go on Dribbble, start posting some work, go on Upwork, whatever, try to get freelance work. Like you could make your own way, right? Like you don't have to land the Facebook job or the Fortune 500 company or even the local agency. Like you don't need permission to do good work. You can go do good work. You can go make a little bit of money, get some experience on Upwork or Fiverr or Craigslist or whatever. And it's like, stick it to the man. Show them that you can do good. Show them that you don't need their permission to earn money. And an alternative route, it's like, cool. Now you've done 6 projects for people on Craigslist. And oh, what do you know? They have a rich uncle that works at IBM. Cool. Now you got an in, whatever. Like those things just kind of work out that way, right? Like, yeah, you got to take life by the horns and, you know, go after it if you know you can do it.
You know, like, let's do something fun. Like, what if we just did a challenge? Like, if someone listening to this episode did a cold email outreach to you, like, would you be open to, like, just doing, like, a 30-minute guest mentoring with them if they put in the work? Ooh. And actually, like, ooh, just, like, you know, like, the first 5 people, like, get that, like, that ever listened to this episode. So it's just, like, it'd be kind of fascinating for me to see how many people like take the call to action and just listening.
Yeah, I would love that. That sounds awesome. And I think that's kind of like, so we're like well into the, you know, well into the episode. See how many people who are actually still listening, right?
And yeah, sometimes I even do this. Towards the end, yeah.
I do this on my like job posts sometimes where I'll put like, if like 3/4 of the way down, like if you've read this far, put in the subject line of the email, banana. And that way, like, I know to filter out.
Oh my God.
So I just know like, okay, anyone who's replying to me at least has like read through the post and they have done like, the lowest common denominator of effort to like read through this. So yeah, like, so let's do it. You know, if anyone is listening to this and they want a free, 30-minute mentoring session with me and Jay Neal? Is that the deal? I don't want to rope you into something you're not signing up for.
No, sure. No, we'll just put a cap on it. You know, first,
okay.
Or something. Or
yeah. Yeah. We'll say the best.
Yeah. I like that.
The best two cold email outreaches with kind of what we've outlined here. We'll do a free 30-minute mentoring session.
Yes.
With them. And yeah, I love it. We'll see it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. But you mentioned, you know, mentoring designers, and I think you've said you've worked with a bunch of designers doing mentoring. And I would love to know, you know, kind of from your perspective, how that's helped you either grow as a designer, being on the other side of it, just mentoring, or what types of things people are going through and struggling with as younger designers.
Like literally like talking to you right now about all this cold emailing and networking, I already know how to do it. So it's not that exciting for me anymore. Like if you say that, hey, why don't you go and create a course on it? Like I get it. It's helpful for so many other people, but because we know it, it's not that exciting to us anymore because we are in a different phase of our careers, right? So like you're in a different phase now running an agency. So maybe trying to get your first freelance contract may not be something that you're super excited about. You might talk about it, but it's not like something that's like, ooh, right? So when I am mentoring these designers, I have to put myself in their shoes, right? Like, hey, I was there once and kind of like ground myself there. Because like to me, it's very simple and easy, right? Like, oh, you just do it this way. But there is someone that's doing it for the first time. Or like if I mean, I don't have any plans to start an agency, but if I were to do that and I come to you, you're like, oh man, it's so easy. Like you do this. But to me, I'm like a newbie. You are the expert. So I think in that mentoring part, it teaches you or teaches me a lot about empathy and then putting yourself like in their shoes and seeing the world from their perspective. Like, and it's really applicable to your day-to-day interaction. Like if you're meeting up with a buddy, right? Like last night I met up with a friend and then he's like, hey, like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, you know what, man, I got a podcast interview tomorrow morning. So then he's asking this, trying to understand my needs and motivations. Like, hey, because you've got to wake up early tomorrow, let's not hang out too late. So this is the same life skill that's here with mentoring. It's like, number one, you're being more cognizant of this. And sometimes people will tell you, and sometimes they won't. So you got to read between the lines. Like sometimes they'll say, like in kind of like, oh yeah, I'm kind of like not comfortable with that. And then move on to something else. So you got to like pause and be like, wait, why are you not comfortable with that? Another thing also I realize is that everyone has a different style. Like I'm super pumped, like let's do it. But not everyone like likes that style, man. And not everyone's like a fan of it. So you also got to like change your like mentoring style for different people and then realize that it's not going to work for everyone.
That's totally true. That's something I've noticed in even running a team is like different people have very different motivations and ways that they respond. Like some people need that hype up, that amp them up, that encouragement. Some people need that like a little bit of stress of like, hey man, I know you can do it, but you really got to like get into it. So it's like, you know, kind of that swift kick in the pants, like wake up,
yeah.
You know, this is, you know, the alarm bells are going off. We need to get you here. And, you know, people, all sorts of different people respond differently to different things. And especially like in different cultures, right? Like being an agency that is all over the world, like even feedback, right? Like, you know, in America, it's like, if you give feedback to someone on their design, you got to like preface it with all of these things. Like, thank you for, you know,
yeah,
for your design. I know you spent a lot of really good time on this. You got to preface it and then you get into the actual feedback. When someone in like another country, it's a lot more blunt. It's like, this is no good. And fix this, right? And it's just like, it's not bad. It's just different cultures interact differently.
Yeah.
All of sorts of different things. And I see how that like trickles down even through, obviously through mentoring, right? That's part of it. It's part of coaching or running a team or anything like that.
And it's getting to know them at a human level. So like yesterday I was having my first session with the mentor. And you could tell that he was nervous and, you know, like he was trying to like just ask me all the questions. And I could realize this. I said, like, you know what? I think I need to first like break the tension. So like as a mentor, you have to realize these things. It's like an experience you're crafting for the other person and making it easy for them to express, to get to that point where they're comfortable sharing with you their needs and wants. So I said, you know what, man? Like we're getting super into like tech stuff. Let's pause for a second. Let's stretch. And I just started like stretching. And I said, you know, man, I love running. He's like, oh my God, my dad is a runner. I run every day for 7 miles. And then we kind of went completely off tangent, talking about his interests and stuff, and really got to like know each other before we kind of came back and talked about like the work stuff. So, and then the other thing is like a lot of the folks that I mentored, let's say in India, you know, through 10K Designers with Abhinav, and you know, those folks will come to, let's say, US to do their masters and stuff. They'll ping me and say that, hey, I got a job here. Like it's really like insane. Like sometimes you think about like, wow, like you can have a positive impact that way in someone's career, right? Like it might be a small thing to you. Like, hey, oh, I just told Janiel that, hey, you can figure this out on your podcasting journey. But you've eased so much mental load in my life at that point, right? So to me, it's almost like doing some kind of like human charity, like, you know, helping people out with their things. So I think that's the final part I would say to mentoring. It's like, and whoever, not just like students, but anybody, it's like, it's that, oh, wow, like I was able to make a small difference. And you don't have to like get a shout out for it or to get recognition, right? But I'm just saying it's very rewarding.
Totally. Yeah. It's like helping, you know, another person achieve a goal or take a next step or feel more comfortable or, you know, whatever is probably, you know, the most rewarding thing. Like everyone is like, yeah, you know, it's like a good salary or meaningful work. But like, I think helping out others is in any context, it's one of those things that almost can't be beat at any level. And it's funny, like how you mentioned kind of breaking the ice and just kind of making people feel a little bit comfortable. I think it's just, it's always interesting to see like what people's perceptions are of you. And you don't know it until they tell you, right? So like people might be being like, be nervous because they're like, oh, you know, Janiel, he's like, you know, this big like podcaster guy, super popular. I'm in the presence of like someone great. And you probably just think of yourself as like a regular dude, but like, it's just that perception, right? And
yes,
we gotta be able to like break that. Like, I remember even a few years ago, someone was like, hey, can we meet and talk about this design file you made? I had some questions. I was like, yeah, sure. So like we got on like a Calendly meeting and he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you met with me. I was like, why? And he was just like, I just didn't think you would ever like have the time to do this. I'm like, I don't know, it's Wednesday. I'm just like a normal dude. Like you are interested in my product I made. Like, this is sweet. I love it. And he was just like so blown away. I was like, I am a nobody. Like, why? Like, this is not a weird thing. And I think that just communicated to me, like, everyone has a different perception of you than what you think. Even if you're just starting out in design, you probably look like a rock star compared to your friends who have never done any design. They probably think you're like legit. You're awesome, right? There's always a helping hand that you can lend to someone. There's always another step. There's always someone above you and always someone below you in terms of their career path or their journey or whatever that you can lend a helping hand to.
100%.
Awesome, man. Well, this has been an awesome talk. Super appreciate you coming on and sharing so many of your insights and wisdom and secrets. Appreciate the time and best of luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today on the Product Design Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, be sure and go follow our guests. Let them know they did a great job and you learned a lot. More to come in the following weeks as we bring on new guests. Please hit that subscribe button so that you will get these podcasts and learn a ton about the product design community. Excited to see you next time. Thanks.